Fletch One by Gregory MacDonald. Copyright 1985 by the author. This recording of the reading of Fletch One was published by arrangement with Gregory MacDonald and was produced in 1988 by Books on Tape Incorporated, which holds the copyright thereto. Neither this recording nor any part thereof may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authority from Books on Tape Incorporated. Please observe the following procedures as you listen to these tapes. If you have borrowed this book from your local library, please return it to them at the end of the agreed period. If you are one of our regular rental customers, you may keep your book for 30 days from date of receipt by you, but after that time, we charge additional rental of 25 cents per day. Dates are checked by postmark. Please return this book at the earliest possible time so another subscriber can have the use of this recording. To return cassettes to us, simply make sure they are all packaged in their plastic cassette cases and in proper order in the mailing container. Kindly seal the mailing container for return. Postage is already paid. Drop in any mailbox for return to Books on Tape. Unless you are at home during the day, you will probably find it more convenient to have tapes mailed to you at your business address rather than your home. Reason is that postmen cannot leave packages if no one is there to receive them. Should a cassette fail to play properly, hold it flat in the palm of your hand and slap it smartly against a hard, flat surface. If this does not work, or if you cannot otherwise free the reels, and if you are a library customer, please ask your local library to contact Books on Tape for a replacement cassette. If you are one of our rental customers, please call us at our regular customer service number. Give us the name of the book and number of the cassette. We will immediately send you a replacement at no charge. Discard the broken cassette. Fletch One by Gregory MacDonald. This book consists of 40 chapters and is 264 pages long. The following material appears on the dust jacket of the book. Now, the author of the Edgar Award-winning novel Fletch, and inspiration for the movie with the same title, takes you back to the very start of Irwin Morris Fletcher's career. It's Fletch's first case, the murder of Donald Habeck, a wealthy criminal lawyer with a past that includes a roster of angry ex-con clients, a certifiably crazy wife, a son confined to a monastery, and a daughter living with an avant-garde poet of violence. They'll all have Fletch outrunning the cops and even his fiancée as he launches his now legendary career. Dedication to Edward Ned Levitt, scholar, agent, and friend. Chapter 1. Did I ask to see you? No, Frank, I want to see you anyway. Frank Jaffe, the editor, refolded the competing newspaper, the Chronicle Gazette, and put it under his elbow on the desk. I have some tough things to say to you.
Little old me?
How would you like lifting a shovel 8 hours a day, every day, 5 days a week, maybe half day, Saturdays? Fletch looked at his sneakers on the rug of Frank's office. Through the top of his left sneaker, he saw the knuckles of three toes. Only the smallest toe showed through the top of his right sneaker. It's not what I see for myself in the parade of life, Frank.
That's what I see for you.
In the parade of life, what do you see yourself suited for?
Journalism.
And what's journalism, young Fletcher? Developing the skill of ending sentences with prepositions, especially questions?
Did I just do that?
Behind his thick lenses, Frank's watery eyes moved across the top of his messy desk.
I just did that.
Frank, what I wanted to see you about... Frank opened a folder on his desk.
I've dug out your personnel file.
The folder was not thick.
You're suited for journalism or pick and shovel work. I wonder which it will be.
Why are you looking at my personnel file? You hired me months ago.
3 months ago. Do you remember why?
I don't.
Because I can be really good, Frank. I think I had the idea this newspaper needed a breath of fresh air, a young maverick who would shake things up a bit, see things differently, maybe jerk people out of their ruts.
How can I do that, Frank, if you won't give me a job?
I've given you a job, lots of jobs.
Not a real job.
First, I put you on the copy desk.
Writing headlines is for poets, Frank.
And kept you there over the growing protests of your co-workers, I might add.
I spilled orange soda on somebody's terminal keyboard.
That's not all you did.
I made it up to him. I bought him a pair of surgical gloves.
Until you wrote the headline, Governor Jokes on Purpose.
I thought that was news.
and somehow the headline appeared in two editions before being killed. Sheer poetry, Frank. Not long-lived poetry, I admit, not deathless poetry, but... So then I assigned you to writing obituaries. You know I want to write sports, Frank. That's why I came in to see you this morning. Not the toughest job in the world, writing obituaries. You answer the phone, listen politely. Sometimes you have to check a few facts. I'm very good at checking facts. Frank held up a piece of paper. His hand quivered and his eyes shook as he read the first paragraph from it. Ruth Mulholland died peacefully today, having accomplished nothing in her 56 years. Did you write that? It was a fact, Frank. I checked. Fletcher, one of the points in your writing obituaries is in our being able to print them. I kept asking your sister, what did she ever do? The sister kept talking, but I was listening, you see. This person, Ruth Mulholland, never graduated from anywhere, never got married, never had a baby, never held a job, never even supported herself. I mean, in 56 years, she never accomplished a damn thing. Finally, I asked the sister, did she ever make anybody a sweater, cook a pan of brownies for anybody, or even for herself? The sister kept saying, no, no, in fact, Ruthie never did a damn thing in her life. I said, well, is that what I should print? And the sister said, well, yes, I guess that's the truth about Ruthie. I checked the facts, Frank. Ruthie never applied for Social Security or a driver's license. She didn't even support her local beauty shop. Fletcher. What? There's not supposed to be any truth in obituaries? When someone has won the Nobel Prize, we print that in an obituary. When someone accomplishes exactly nothing in life, why don't we print that? Doing absolutely nothing is a statement, Frank, a response to life. It's news, it's interesting. Ruthie didn't get her obituary printed either. Frank held up another shaking piece of paper. So you were assigned to writing wedding announcements. That's just a job of taking dictation. You don't even have to be responsible for the main fact, the wedding, because it hasn't taken place yet. Your very first announcement read, Sarah and Roland Jameson, first cousins, are to be married Wednesday in a ceremony restricted to family. Crisp. Crisp, Frank agreed. Concise. Concise. To the point. Absolutely to the point. And, Fletch said, factual. Took talent to dig that story out. Not much. When the mother of the bride called, I simply asked her why both the bride and groom had the same last name. And she answered you without hesitation? She hesitated. She said they were first cousins? She said their fathers were brothers. And neither the bride nor the groom was adopted, right? Frank, I checked. What do you think I am? I think you're an inexperienced journalist. If the rules of journalism apply on political and crime and sports pages, why don't they apply on obituaries and wedding announcement pages? Newspapers are supposed to tell both sides of a story, right? Pah! Sundays we devote pages and pages to wedding announcements. Why don't we give equal space to divorce announcements? Fletcher, news is news, Frank. You think that by writing obituaries and wedding announcements in this heavy-handed factual way is how you're going to get yourself assigned to the sports page, is that it? Truth is truth, Frank. Someday, Fletcher, may you be a victim of someone like yourself. Through his pupils dipped in clam juice, Frank looked at Fletcher. You're getting married Saturday? Yes, next Saturday. Why? Barbara has the day open. Unless the purpose is to have children, Frank said slowly, marriage is a legal institution guaranteeing only that you get screwed by lawyers. You don't believe in true love. True love ran at Saratoga Saturday, made a strong start, faded fast, and ended at the back of the pack. I suppose you expect time off for a honeymoon? Barbara's rather counting on it. That's another thing I wanted to see you about. You haven't worked here a year yet. In fact, some say you haven't worked here at all yet. Yeah, but Frank, how many times in life do you have a honeymoon? Don't ask. Why are you so sunburned? I ran in the Sardinal race yesterday. Your hair looks like it hasn't crossed the finish line yet. Fletch smiled. There's a story there. In your hair? I'd believe anything is in your hair. In the race. Do you know about the Ben Franklin Friends Service? Guess I don't. Basically, it's a company specializing in health and prostitution. What? You call them and this sultry voice answers saying, Ben Franklin Friends Service, you want a friend? Only sometimes she slurs a little and it sounds more like, you want to, friend? You call them often? The guys on the desk played a joke on me one night. They told me to phone out for pizzas, and that was the number they gave me. The girl on the phone was trying to set up an appointment for me, and I kept asking if she had anchovies and pepperoni. I guess she thought I was a pervert. You ought to call them sometime. I need a friend. So I looked into them. Big business, beautiful girls, all of them in great physical condition. They're made to work out, you know. What's the story? They were running yesterday, in the race, all of them. A flotilla of call girls. About 12 of them all together, running through the city streets, downtown, wearing t-shirts that read in front, "You Want a Friend?" and in back, "Ben Franklin." They all made it to the finish, too. So what's the story? Oh, don't tell me. I've got it. Frank put his hands to his forehead. Streetwalkers joggle. Call girls come running. Consider their leg muscles, Frank. I'm all excited. They were advertising their business, Frank. So where did you finish in this race?
Right behind them. I was following a story, you might say.
Faithful to the last.
You're not getting the point.
I'm not.
These call girls were using a city-run health and sports event to advertise their service.
So a few prostitutes ran in the city foot race yesterday. Why shouldn't they? Not against the law. They wore t-shirts advertising their services, gave thrills to a few dirty old men leg watchers standing on the curbs. So where's the story?
You ran pictures of them today, on your sports page, coming and going, front and back.
Frank paled.
We did.
You did. Jeez!
Frank grabbed the News Tribune off the floor and turned to the sports pages.
We did.
There's the story.
You mean we're the story?
Gave a call girl service a nice big spread. Lots of free publicity. Have you heard from the Archbishop yet? How about the district attorney? Any of your advertisers object?
Damn. Someone did this on purpose.
You need me on the sports pages, Frank.
Look at the caption. Oh, my God. Physical beauty and stamina exemplified by employees of the Ben Franklin Service Company who ran together yesterday in the city's Sardinal race. Group finished near end of race. I can't stand it.
They weren't in any hurry.
Neither were you, apparently.
You were just telling me never to get ahead of my story.
Get up and come into the office early Monday morning.
Frank was tearing through the competing newspaper, the Chronicle Gazette, on his desk, trying to find the sports pages.
Have to waste a damn day firing people.
The Gazette didn't run pictures of the call girls, Frank, front or back. They just ran pictures of the winners.
Geez, they practice tired old journalism over there.
Frank sat back in his chair. He looked like a boxer between rounds.
Why did I have to start off the week by seeing you?
Bring a little freshness to your life. A few laughs. Shake you up a bit. Make you see a few things differently, like a couple of photos on your sports page.
You own a necktie?
Sure.
I've never seen it.
It's holding one end of my surfboard off the floor.
I suppose you're serious. What's holding up the other end?
Fletch looked down at the top of his jeans. A belt someone gave me.
I decided over the weekend to give you one more chance.
Frank looked at his watch.
You gonna try me out as a sports writer?
No.
After all, what companies do is expect youth, energy, and experience all from the same person. That's not fair.
The police beat? Fine.
Thought we might try knocking a few of the rough edges off you. City Hall, I can do it. Just give me a scorecard. So I figure it's experience, polish you need. You do own a suit, don't you? The courts! Damn, you want me to cover the courts.
I know how the courts work, Frank. Remarkable how little they have to do with the law, you know?
Society.
Society?
Society. Seeing you're so quick to identify deceased people who never accomplished a damn thing in their lives and point out to the public first cousins who intend to marry each other, I think you might have a little talent for covering society.
You mean society like in high society?
High society, low society, you know, lifestyles. All those features that cater to the anxieties of our middle-class readers.
Frank, I don't believe in society.
That's okay, Fletch. Society doesn't believe in you either.
I'd be no good at it.
You might be attractive if you combed your hair.
Little old ladies slipping vodka into their tea?
Haybeck. Donald Edwin Haybeck.
Didn't he try out as goalie for the Red Wings?
If you read anything other than the sports pages, Fletcher, you'd know Donald Edwin Haybeck is one of this neighborhood's more sensational attorneys.
Is he on an exciting case?
Haybeck called me last night and said he and his wife have decided, after much discussion, to give $5 million to the art museum. You're interested in art, aren't you?
Not as poker chips. He wants the story treated right, you know, with dignity. No invasion of their privacy, no intrusion into their personal lives.
Frank, would you mind if I sit down?
Help yourself. I forgot you ran slowly in a foot race yesterday.
Fletch sat on the rug.
Sit anywhere.
Thanks.
La-dee-da philanthropy.
Finish the verse and you may have a hit song.
Frank, you want me, I am Fletcher, to do an arm's-length, hands-off, vitty-vitty polite story about some for-God's-sake society couple who are giving 5 million pieces of tissue paper to the art museum?
Polite, yes. Why not polite? Here are a couple of people doing something nice for the world, sharing their wealth.
Curb your need to report Mrs. Habeck slips vodka into her tea. Time you learned how to be polite. By the way, I can't see you over the edge of the desk.
I disappeared.
Well, you better reappear. You're meeting with Habeck in the publisher's office at 10 o'clock. Pity your necktie and belt are holding up your surfboard.
God, any story which starts with the reporter meeting the subject in the publisher's office isn't worth getting up for.
See, you're improving as a journalist already. You just ended a sentence with a preposition.
I won't do it.
Fletch, I'm pretty sure you'd be just as attractive working a pick and shovel in the city streets. You wouldn't have to wear a necktie, belt, or comb your hair. I can arrange to have you leave here Friday, and you and Lucy can take as long a honeymoon as you can afford.
Might make a nice weekend. And her name's Barbara.
I thought so. Sunday bliss with Barbara, Tuesday with blisters.
Frank, why don't you let Habeck write the story himself? He's paying $5 million for the privilege.
Ham Starbuck stuck his head around the office door. He looked at Fletch sitting cross-legged on the rug.
It's that kind of morning, is it?
So far, Frank answered.
Floored one. After glancing at certain photos on the sports page, I see I have a few more to floor today.
Frank, were you expecting Donald Habeck?
Not me. John's expecting him. He should be sent to the publisher's office.
He'll never make it.
He telephoned?
No, he's dead in the parking lot.
Frank asked,
what do you mean?
In a dark blue Cadillac Seville, bullet hole in his temple.
Fletch sprang off the floor without using his hands.
My story!
Guess we should call the police.
Get the photographers down there first, Frank said.
Already done that.
Also, Biff Wilson, has he reported in yet?
I radioed him. He's on the freeway.
Biff Wilson, Fletch said. Frank, you gave this story to me.
I haven't given you anything, Fletcher.
Habeck, Donald Edwin, was I supposed to interview him at 10 o'clock?
Fletcher, do me a favor.
Anything, Frank.
Get lost. Report to Ann McGarahan in society.
Maybe there's a necktie in my car.
I just made a career decision, Frank said to his desk.
What's that, Frank?
I'm not coming into the office early Monday mornings anymore.
Chapter 2.
Hey, Beck, Harrison, and Holler, good morning.
Hello, H-cubed.
Habeck, Harrison, and Holler, may I help you?
Mr. Chambers, please.
I'm sorry, sir. Would you repeat that name?
Mr. Chambers?
Looking across the city room of the News Tribune, no one could guess that someone had just been shot to death in the parking lot of that building and that everyone there knew it.
Did everyone know it?
Absolutely. In a newspaper office, unlike most other companies, the process of rumor becoming gossip, becoming fact, becoming substantiated, reliable news was professionally accelerated. It happened with the speed of a rocket. Assimilation of news happened just as fast. Journalists are interested in the stories they are working on. Some have a mental filing cabinet, some a wastebasket into which they drop all other news.
Alston Chambers, please. He's somewhere down in your stacks, I expect. An intern lawyer, a trainee, whatever you call him. A veteran and a gentleman.
Oh, yes, sir. A. Chambers.
Probably drifting around your corridors without a place to wrinkle his trousers.
One moment, sir.
A line was ringing. The telephone operator had to add,
excuse me, sir, for not recognizing the name. Mr. Chambers does not have clients.
Chambers speaking.
Sounds sepulchral.
Must be Fletcher.
Must be.
Hope you've called me for lunch. I gotta get out of this place.
In fact, I have. 1 o'clock at Manilow's.
You want to discuss your wedding. You want my advice as to how to get out of it. Does Barbara still have it scheduled for Saturday?
No, no, yes. Can't talk right now, Alston. Just want to give you the news. Barbara's told you she's pregnant.
Habeck, Harrison, and Holler. That the law firm you work for?
You know it. Bad pay and all the shit I can take.
Donald Edwin Habeck? One of the senior partners in this den of legal inequity.
Donald Edwin Habeck won't be in today. Thought I'd call in for him.
I don't get it. Why not? What's the joke?
He's been shot to death.
This is a joke.
Not from his point of view.
Where? When?
At the News Tribune a few minutes ago. I gotta go.
I wonder if he left a will.
Why do you say that?
Lawyers are famous for not writing wills for themselves.
Alston, I'd appreciate it at lunch if you'd talk to me about Habeck. Tell me what you know.
You on the story?
I think so.
Does anyone else think so?
I'm on it until I'm ordered off it.
Fletch, you're getting married Saturday. This is no time to flirt with unemployment.
See you at 1 o'clock at Manilow's.
Chapter 3.
Did he do himself?
Fletch was looking over Biff's shoulder into the front seat of the Cadillac. A man in his 60s was slumped over the armrest. His left leg hung out of the car. His shoe almost touched the ground.
Biff turned his head slowly to look at Fletch. His look said that plebeians were not supposed to initiate conversations with royalty.
Or was he shot?
Not answering, Biff Wilson stood up and turned. He waited for Fletch to move out of the way. Despite the heat, the strong sun in the parking lot, Biff wore a suit jacket and tie, although his shirt collar was loosened. Hair grew out of his ears.
Biff walked a few steps to the three policemen standing by the black and white police car. Only two of the police were in uniform.
"Do we know who found him yet?" Biff asked.
"Do we?" Fletch said to himself.
The younger uniformed officer was staring at Fletch. Three cars were parked at odd angles around the blue Cadillac. One was the plainclothesman's unmarked green sedan. The second was the black and white sedan, front door open, police radio crackling, red and blue roof lights rotating. The third said News Tribune on the sides and back. This was the car Biff Wilson used. Its front door was open, too. Radios crackled from its interior, and a blue light flashed from its roof as well. The older man in uniform looked at his notebook. Female employee of the News Tribune named Pilar O'Brien. Biff let spit drop on the sidewalk between his shoes.
Never heard of her. Suppose she's a secretary. And she called the cops?
She told the security guard at the gate.
And he called the cops?
No, said the plainclothesman. He called the news desk.
Biff's smile glinted. Everybody's bucking for promotion.
Your photographers have already come and gone, said the elder uniform.
They didn't touch anything, the youngest cop said. I saw to that. Photographed him from the side and through the windshield. Took a few long shots. Didn't touch the car or the victim.
Gun been found? Biff asked.
Not visible. Might have slipped under the seat, said the plainclothesman.
Where's forensics? I want my coffee.
Donald E. Habeck, the elder uniform read from his notebook. Anyone know what he was doing here?
Yeah, Biff answered. He was here to see John Winters, the publisher. 10 o'clock appointment. They were going to set up the announcement that Habeck and his wife are going to... were going to give $5 million to the art museum.
How do you know that, Biff?
The plainclothesman asked.
How do I know everything, Gomez?
Again, Biff spat on the sidewalk.
I know you're the greatest, Biff. I spent all last night telling my wife that.
Biff shrugged. Car telephone jerk. Ham Starbucks said Donald Habeck was dead in the parking lot. I asked him what's he doing at the News Tribune. Wouldn't you say that's a natural question?
That's why I just asked it, Biff.
At least Gomez had taken off his coat and rolled up his sleeves. There was no shade in the parking lot. The younger uniformed policeman kept giving Fletch long, hard looks.
$5 million, jeez.
The older uniformed policeman rubbed his forehead with his sleeve. Think of being able to give away $5 million.
You've never been able to do that? Biff asked.
Saturday I gave my niece and her new husband an old couch we had in the den. Slob didn't even come for it. I had to truck it over myself.
Nice of you, Biff said.
Don't get no story about myself in the newspaper for it, though.
Maybe Biff will write you up a story, Gomez said.
Sure, Biff said. Friday night I gave my kid a welt under his left eye. I'm generous, too.
Here comes your competition, Biff.
Gomez nodded toward the security gate. There were two cars there from the Chronicle Gazette.
Sunday, I realized how much I missed that couch. I had to sit up during the ball game, and my back was sore from moving the damn thing the day before.
The younger uniformed cop touched Biff's sleeve and then pointed to Fletch. He spoke quietly. He with you? Biff considered Fletch from his throne as News Tribune crime writer.
Nah.
Does he work for the News Tribune?
I don't know.
Biff was not keeping his voice low.
Maybe I've seen him around emptying wastebaskets. Didn't know the News Tribune had any wastebaskets, Gomez said. Just delivery trucks.
At the gate, the security guard was delaying the arrival of the Chronicle Gazette's reporter and photographer at the scene of the crime.
Haven't you had any coffee yet this morning? Biff asked Gomez.
Only two cups, Gomez said. Anglo.
You act like you haven't had any.
El mismo, Gomez said. Because I've seen something about that guy, the younger officer said, recently. A picture or something.
Biff fixed Fletch with his distant gaze again.
Maybe on the funnies page.
Finally, the two cars from the Chronicle Gazette reached the scene of the crime. Neither had lights flashing nor radios crackling.
Don't you guys touch anything, the younger uniformed officer shouted at them.
The reporter said, shut up. He looked into the car. The photographer was bending around taking pictures without the reporter in them.
Who is he? The reporter asked.
Not confirmed, Biff answered.
Employee of the News Tribune?
Probably, Biff answered. Most of us have caddy Sevilles. I let my kid take mine to school.
Security guard must know who he is, the reporter said. He must have given a name when he came in.
Go ask him, Biff said.
This is your story, huh, Biff? The reporter asked.
It happened in his backyard, Gomez said.
Yeah, the reporter said. I expect I can make something of that. Murder in the parking lot of a family newspaper.
That's Habeck, said the photographer. Donald Habeck, the attorney, rich guy, lives over in the Heights.
Yeah, said the reporter. What's he doing here?
Natural question, said Biff.
Yet to be determined, said Gomez.
How long you been working for the News Tribune, Gomez? The reporter asked.
Nothing's going to be said until the medical examiner and forensics team have come and gone, Gomez answered.
Not by you.
The reporter went to his car and began talking into his telephone.
Here they come.
Gomez nodded at the station wagons coming through the security gate into the parking lot.
Want to get some coffee inside, Biff?
Biff looked at the side of the News Tribune building.
Coffee's no good in there either.
I'll get Maria to make some special.
Oh, yeah, Biff said. I forgot your sister-in-law works in the cafeteria.
You did like how you got her the job.
Fletch began moving out of the area into which the forensics team was moving. The younger uniformed policeman said to Fletch,
You work here?
Nah, said Fletch, just making a delivery. Just bringing Mr. Wilson his uppers.
The young cop looked alert.
His uppers?
Yeah, said Fletch. He really messed him up last night with Taffy Apple. Took the dental lab an hour to get him clean this morning.
Oh.
The older uniformed policeman was looking inside the car at Donald Edwin Habeck.
I'll bet my giving away that old couch, he said slowly, meant more to me than this guy's giving away $5 million.